Chapter 10. Saying nothing. What sort of conduct is that? The $7,000 the fellow was always talking about did not, in his opinion, justify such behavior. Moreover, nobody had seen them. He, Herman, seriously doubted if there were 7,000 cents, and the tug, no doubt, was mortgaged up to the top of the funnel to the firm of Seegers. But let that pass. He wouldn't stand in the girl's way. Her head was so turned that she had become no good to them of late. Quite unable even to put the children to bed without her aunt. It was bad for the children. They got unruly, and yesterday he actually had to give Gustav a thrashing. For that too, Falk was made responsible apparently. And looking at my Herman's heavy, puffy, good-natured face, I knew he would not exert himself till greatly exasperated, and, therefore, would thrash very hard, and being fat would resent the necessity. How Falk had managed to turn the girl's head was more difficult to understand. I supposed Herman would know. And then hadn't there been Miss Van Loo? It could not be his silvery tongue, or the subtle seduction of his manner. He had no more of what is called anner than an animal which, however, on the other hand, is never, and can never be called vulgar. Therefore it must have been his bodily appearance, exhibiting a virility of nature as exaggerated as his beard, and resembling a sort of constant ruthlessness. It was seen in the very manner he lolled in the chair. He meant no offense, but his intercourse was characterized by that sort of frank disregard of susceptibilities a man of 7'6", living in a world of dwarfs, would naturally assume, without in the least wishing to be unkind. But amongst men of his own stature, or nearly, this frank use of his advantages, in such matters as the awful towage bills for instance, caused much impotent gnashing of teeth. When attentively considered it seemed appalling at times. He was a strange beast. But maybe women liked it. Seen in that light he was well worth taming, and I suppose every woman at the bottom of her heart considers herself as a tamer of strange beasts. But Herman arose with precipitation to carry the news to his wife. I had barely the time, as he made for the cabin door, to grab him by the seat of his inexpressibles. I begged him to wait till Falk in person had spoken with him. There remained some small matter to talk over, as I understood. He sat down again at once, full of suspicion. What matter? He said surlily. Have had enough of his nonsense. There's no matter at all, as he knows very well, the girl has nothing in the world. She came to us in one thin dress when my brother died, and I have a growing family. It can't be anything of that kind, I opined. He's desperately enamored of your niece. I don't know why he did not say so before. Upon my word, I believe it is because he was afraid to lose, perhaps, the felicity of sitting near her on your quarter deck. I intimated my conviction that his love was so great as to be in a sense cowardly. The effects of a great passion are unaccountable. It has been known to make a man timid. But Herman looked at me as if I had foolishly raved, and the twilight was dying out rapidly. You don't believe in passion, do you, Herman? I said cheerily. He passion of fear will make a cornered rat courageous. Fox in a corner. He will take her off your hands in one thin frock just as she came to you. And after 10 years' service it isn't a bad bargain, I added. Far from taking offense, he resumed his air of civic virtue. The sudden night came upon him, while he stared placidly along the deck, bringing in contact with his thick lips, and taking away again after a jet of smoke, the curved mouthpiece fitted to the stem of his pipe. The night came upon him, and buried in haste his whiskers, his globular eyes, his puffy pale face, his fat knees and the vast flat slippers on his fatherly feet. Only his short arms in respectable white shirt sleeves remained very visible, propped up like the flippers of a seal reposing on the strand. Falk wouldn't settle anything about repairs. Told me to find out first how much wood I should require, and he would see, he remarked, And after he had spat peacefully in the dust, we heard over the water the beat of the tug's floats. There is, on a calm night, nothing more suggestive of fierce and headlong haste than the rapid sound made by the paddle wheels of a boat threshing her way through a quiet sea, and the approach of fog towards his fate seemed to be urged by an impatient and passionate desire. The engines must have been driven to the very utmost of their revolutions. We heard them slow down at last, and, vaguely, the white hull of the tug appeared moving against the black islets, whilst a slow and rhythmical clapping, as of thousands of hands, rose on all sides. It ceased all at once, just before fog brought her up. A singly brusque splash was followed by the long-drawn rumbling of iron links running through the hawse pipe. Then a solemn silence fell upon the roadstead. "He will soon be here," I murmured, and after that we waited for him without a word. Meantime, raising my eyes, I beheld the glitter of a lofty sky above the Diana's mastheads. The multitude of stars gathered in two clusters, in rows, in lines, in masses, in groups, shone all together, unanimously, and the few isolated ones, blazing by themselves in the midst of dark patches, seemed to be of a superior kind, and of an inextinguishable nature. But long striding footsteps were heard hastening along the deck. The high bulwarks of the Diana made a deeper darkness. We rose from our chairs quickly, and fog, appearing before us, all in white, stood still. Nobody spoke at first, as though we had been covered with confusion. His arrival was fiery, but his white bulk, of indefinite shape, and without features, made him loom up like a man of snow. "The captain here has been telling me," Dot Herman began in a homely and amicable voice, and Falk had a low, nervous laugh. His cool negative legend undertone had no inflections, but the strength of a powerful emotion made him ramble in his speech. He had always desired a home. It was difficult to live alone, though he was not answerably. He was domestic. There had been difficulties. But since he had seen Herman's niece, he found that it had become at last impossible to live by himself. "Mean impossible," he repeated with no sort of emphasis, and only with the slightest of pauses, but the word fell into my mind with the force of a new idea. "I have not said anything to her yet," Herman observed quietly. And Falk dismissed this by a "that's all right." "Certainly. Very proper." There was a necessity for perfect frankness in marrying, especially. Herman seemed attentive, but he seized the first opportunity to ask us into the cabin. "And by the by, Falk," he said innocently, as we passed in, "the timber came to no less than $47.50. Falk, uncovering his head, lingered in the passage. "Oh, mother time," he said, and Herman nudged me angrily, I don't know why. The girl alone in the cabin sat sewing at some distance from the table. Falk stopped short in the doorway. Without a word, without a sign, without the slightest inclination of his bony head, by the silent intensity of his look alone, he seemed to lay his Herculean frame at her feet. Her hand sank slowly on her lap, and raising her clear eyes, she let her soft, beaming glance enfold him from head to foot like a slow and pale caress. He was very hot when he sat down. She, with bowed head, went on with her sewing. Her neck was very white under the light of the lamp, but Falk, hiding his face in the palms of his hands, shuddered faintly. He drew them down, even to his beard, and his uncovered eyes astonished me by their tense and irrational expression, as though he had just swallowed a heavy gulp of alcohol. It passed away while he was binding us to secrecy. Not that he cared, but he did not like to be spoken about, and I looked at the girl's marvelous, at her wonderful, at her regal hair, plaited tight into that one astonishing and maidenly tress. Whenever she moved her well-shaped head, it would stir stiffly to and fro on her back. The thin cotton sleeve fitted the irreproachable roundness of her arm like a skin, and her very dress, stretched on her bust, seemed to palpitate like a living tissue with the strength of vitality animating her body. how good her complexion was, the outline of her soft cheek, and the small convoluted conch of her rosy ear. To pull her needle she kept the little finger apart from the others. It seemed a waste of power to see her sewing either Nally sewing with that industrious and precise movement of her arm, going on eternally upon all the oceans, under all the skies, in innumerable harbors. Bowers. And suddenly I heard Falk's voice declare that he could not marry a woman unless she knew of something in his life that had happened 10 years ago. It was an accident. An unfortunate accident. It would affect the domestic arrangements of their home, but, once told, it need not be alluded to again for the rest of their lives. Should want my wife to feel for me, he said. He has made me unhappy. And how could he keep the knowledge of it to himself, he asked us, perhaps through years and years of companionship. What sort of companionship would that be? He had thought it over. A wife must know. Then why not at once? He counted on Herman's kindness for presenting the affair in the best possible light. And her man's countenance, mystified before, became very sour. He stole an inquisitive glance at me. I shook my head blankly. Some people thought, Falk went on, that such an experience changed a man for the rest of his life. He couldn't say. It was hard, awful, and not to be forgotten, but he did not think himself a worse man than before. Only he talked in his sleep now, he believed. At last I began to think he had accidentally killed someone, perhaps a friend, his own father maybe, when he went on to say that probably we were aware he never touched meat. Throughout he spoke English, of course, of my account. He swayed forward heavily. The girl, with her hands raised before her pale eyes, was threading her needle. He glanced at her, and his mighty trunk overshadowed the table, bringing nearer to us the breadth of his shoulders, the thickness of his neck, and that incongruous and shore-right head, burned in the desert, hollowed and lean, as if by excesses of vigils and fasting. His beard flowed imposingly downwards, out of sight, between the two brown hands gripping the edge of the table, and his persistent glance made somber by the wide dilations of the pupils, fascinated. Imagine to yourselves, he said in his ordinary voice, that I have eaten man. I could only ejaculate a faint H of complete enlightenment. But Herman, dazed by the excessive shock, actually murmured, Himmel, what for? It was my terrible misfortune to do so, said Falk in a measured undertone. The girl, unconscious, sewed on. Mrs. Herman was absent in one of the staterooms, sitting up with Lena, who was feverish. But Herman suddenly put both his hands up with a jerk. The embroidered calotte fell, and, in the twinkling of an eye, he had rumpled his hair all ends up in a most extravagant manner. In this state he strove to speak. With every effort his eyes seemed to start further out of their sockets. His head looked like a mop. He choked, gasped, swallowed, and managed to shriek out the one word, beast. From that moment till Falk went out of the cabin, the girl, with her hands folded on the work lying in her lap, never took her eyes off him. His own, in the blindness of his heart, darted all over the cabin, only seeking to avoid the sight of Herman's raving. It was ridiculous, and was made almost terrible by the stillness of every other person present. It was contemptible, and was made appalling by the man's overmastering horror of this awful sincerity, coming to him suddenly, with the conscience of such a fact. He walked with great strides. He gasped. He wanted to know from Falk, how dared he to come and tell him this? Did he think himself a proper person to be sitting in this cabin, where his wife and children lived? Tell his niece. Expected him to tell his niece. His own brother's daughter. Shameless. Did I ever hear tell of such impudence? He appealed to me. His man here ought to have gone, and hidden himself out of sight instead of. But it's a great misfortune for me. But it's a great misfortune for me, Falk would ejaculate from time to time. However, Herman kept on running frequently against the corners of the table. At last he lost a slipper, and crossing his arms on his breast, walked up with one stocking foot very close to Falk, in order to ask him whether he did think there was any where on earth a woman abandoned enough to mate with such a monster. Did he? I tried to restrain him. He tore himself out of my hands. He found his slipper, and, endeavoring to put it on, stormed standing on one leg. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.